Hi, and welcome back to Small Way Podcast with Jeremiah. Today we reach episode number 308 in overalls. If you're new to this podcast, hi, I'm Jeremiah here on this podcast. We tend to motivate you to become the best person you can be. And if you're one of the originals on the podcast, hey, I missed you guys. And today we have Mr. Terry. And well, actually, I'm gonna let Mr. Terry tell you all about himself.
Well, Jeremiah, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to talking with you today. I'll give you the sort of the background. My name is Terry Tucker. I was born and raised on the south side of Chicago. You can't tell this from looking at me, but or from my voice, but I'm 6'8" tall, and I played college basketball at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, despite having three knee surgeries in high school. When I graduated from college, I moved home to find a job. I was actually the first person in my family to graduate from college, and I was all set to make my mark on the world with my newly obtained business administration degree. And I look back now and realize I didn't know anything about business just because I had a degree. Fortunately, I was able to find that first job in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain, in their marketing department. Unfortunately, I lived with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mom care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Professionally, as I said, started out at Wendy's. Then I jumped to hospital administration. And then I made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer. And part of that job was I was an undercover narcotics investigator. I was a SWAT team hostage negotiator. After that, started my own school security consulting business, coached girls high school basketball, published my book in 2020, but for the last 10 years have been dealing with a rare form of cancer, a rare form of melanoma. And then I guess finally to round it out, my wife and I have been married for almost 30 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy and is an officer in the new branch of the military, the Space Force.
Wow, that's some resume. Goodness, I love it. I love it. I do have a few questions. Okay.
Go right ahead. Whatever rabbit hole you would like to go down, we can do that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start off with, if you could have dinner with anyone, who would it be?
Boy, if I could have dinner with anyone, who would it be? I mean, the person who comes to mind right now is Jesus. I think it would be just an absolute blast to, you know, sit across the table from our Lord and Savior and just have a conversation, just tell some jokes, whatever, you know. I think that would probably be my answer.
I love that answer. I love that answer. Another question is, what made you love basketball?
I was lucky. I did grow up on the south side of Chicago, but for a short period of time, I lived in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I started playing basketball. And I was incredibly fortunate that, and this was just a luck of the draw kind of thing, that I got on a peewee basketball team with the assistant basketball coach at Ohio State. And so I really got access to the basketball camps and all that kind of stuff. And it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. It was a sport that you could play by yourself. All you needed was a hoop and a basketball. It wasn't like baseball where, you know, you needed somebody else to pitch to you or to play catch and things like that. So it was just something that I gravitated to, I think probably because of my height as well. I mean, when I was 14 years old, I was 6'5". So it really, you know, it was one of those things where, well, maybe you want to look at playing basketball, but I was incredibly uncoordinated and things like that. I jumped a lot of rope to try to get my coordination back like that. So I think part of it was my height, and part of it was that I got to hang out with some of the Ohio State players.
I feel that. Now, I got a really tough question since you're a Chicagoan. Are we going Cubs or White Sox?
You know, I'm a South Sider, so it should be the White Sox, but I'll be honest with you, it's been Cubs my whole life.
Let's go. Awesome, awesome. And another big Chicago question. Do you think Chicago has better pizza than New York?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. I still rave about this, and my wife is from Minnesota, and I took her. There's a place at 83rd and Pulaski called Vito and Nick's. And it's a cracker crust, and the toppings are, I mean, edge to edge, and it literally melts in your mouth. And just talking to you about it right now makes me want to fly to Chicago and get one. So it's great pizza. Great pizza.
Yeah, because a lot of people say Chicago's only good for deep crust. I'm like, I've been to Chicago. They got some really good pizza.
They do. There's a lot of places other than Vito and Nick's. But I'll tell you, Vito and Nick's for me, if I was a dying man, a condemned man, needed my last meal, I'd be like, I want a Vito and Nick's pizza.
I love it. Now, tell me about your book. What inspired you to write a book?
So the book was really born out of two conversations that I had. One was with a former player that I had coached. As I mentioned, I coached girls high school basketball in Texas. And my wife and I live in Colorado now. And this former player and her fiance had moved to Colorado where my wife and I live. And the four of us had dinner one night. And I remember saying to her after dinner that I was excited that she was living close and I could watch her find and live her purpose. And she got real quiet for a while. And then she looked at me and she said, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? I said, I have no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason you were put on the face of this earth, using your unique gifts and talents and living that reason. So that was one conversation. And then I had a young man in college who reached out to me on social media and asked me what I thought were the most important things that he should learn to not just be successful in his job or in business, but to be successful in life. And I didn't want to give him the, you know, get up early, work hard, help others. Not that those aren't important. Those are incredibly important. But I wanted to see if I could maybe go deeper with him. So I took some time and I made some notes and, you know, had these 10 thoughts, these 10 ideas, these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I kind of stepped back and I was like, well, you know, I've got a life story that fits underneath this principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates that principle. So I, as part of my cancer journey, I had my left leg amputated in April of 2020. And I started chemotherapy 3 months later after that, after I healed for the tumors that I still have in my lungs. And while I was healing, I sat down at the computer every day and I built stories, and they're real stories about real people underneath each of the principles. And that's how sustainable excellence, the 10 principles to leading your uncommon and extraordinary life, came about.
I love that. I love that. Now, I have another question for you. So you now have a daughter that's a part of the Space Force. In your opinion, what is the most proudest thing as a parent? You can always look at your daughter and always say that I'm very proud of you. What brings that joy every time you see her?
I'll be honest with you. When she was in middle school, she was diagnosed with dyslexia and anxiety disorder and an attention disorder. And she worked very hard. I mean, we gave her the tools. We had her work with a learning specialist, but she learns different. You know, I mean, a lot of parents, you know, when their kids are listening to music, when they're studying, you're like, you know, shut that off and study and stuff like that. But our daughter learns with color. Our daughter learns with music and things like that. And so she worked incredibly hard to get into the Air Force Academy. And I will be honest with you, Jeremiah, when the day she walked across the stage, the Air Force Academy are called the Falcons. That's their mascot. The day she walked across the stage at Falcon Stadium, got her diploma, and shook hands with the President of the United States, I'll tell you, as a parent, my wife and I couldn't have been prouder.
I'm happy about that. I really am. Now, tell me about the time when you were a part of the police force, but we're not going to talk about negative times. We're going to talk about the times where you were able to make a difference in someone's life. Could you give me one of those instances?
You know, I want to say we made a difference every night. You know, every contact that we had was something that, you know, you realize that as a police officer, you know, when you made a traffic stop, for example, you know, for me, it may have been the third traffic stop of the night, but for the person that I stopped, it may have been the scariest thing that happened to them all years. And so, you know, we always tried to keep that in top of mind. Now, we obviously had to do what we had to do, whether it was to remain safe or whether it was to enforce the law and things like that. I mean, I was a hostage negotiator. I helped a lot of people not take their own lives or not have to be killed by the police because, you know, they had barricaded themselves with a suspect or something like that. I think that was a, you know, something I did. My partner and I were both DUI qualified. So people that were driving drunk or driving on drugs, got a lot of those people off the streets. Trying to think if there's one particular story. I can tell you a funny story from when I was a hostage negotiator. I happened to be working in uniform this particular night. I was a sergeant at the time. And so I got to the scene fairly quickly and I was talking to the uniform officers who were on scene. I'm like, what's the story? It's like, this guy's drunk. He's barricaded himself in his house with a gun and his wife. I'm like, okay, do you have him on the phone? Yes, we do. So I started to talk to him. And usually you don't ask somebody to come out or to let the hostage go early in the negotiation. Usually that's sometimes hours into it, but I just kind of had a feeling with this guy. And so I thought, I'm going to take a chance here. And so I said to him, what would it take for you to come out? And there was a long pause. And then he said, give me a beer. And I'm like, I said, if I gave you a beer, do I have your word that you would let your wife come out and that you would surrender and come out? He said, do I have your word that I could drink it? I said, you have my word. Do I have your word you will come out? He said, yeah. So I gave $5 to one of the officers. I said, get down to the store, buy a beer. The tactical team put the beer on the front porch and I called them back. And I said, your beer's on the front porch, but you don't get it until your wife comes out, you put the gun down and you come out. All of a sudden the front door flies open. Here comes his wife. Here he comes with his hands up. We handcuffed him, let him drink his beer and off to jail he went.
It's, oh man. That's a funny one. That's a good one. Now, you tell that you've been married 30 plus years. What made you want to say you are the one I want to marry forever and ever?
Oh, it was her who said that. I mean, I married up. She married down big time. I think like anything else in life, it's all about timing. You know, it's not so much meeting the right person as it is meeting the right person at the right time. And I really believe that for both of us, we were at the right time. We had been friends for a number of years. We had a group that we kind of hung out with, and she was dating somebody else and I was dating somebody else. And we just had this big group where we would go to lunch together. We would go to movies together. We would do things on the weekend with this group. And one thing led to another. And, you know, we kind of like, hey, we'd like to date. And like I said, we've been friends for a couple of years. So, I mean, we dated for about 6 months and then became engaged and got married and have been together for almost 30 years now. So I don't know what the secret is other than for me to tell her that she's always right, which she usually is. I'm usually the dummy that's like, you know, that she's telling me, that's not right. Okay, you know, you're the boss. I'll let you go there. But she's been incredibly supportive of me. I think I've been incredibly supportive of her. And I think that's a big part of it. You have to take each other's feelings, each other's hopes, each other's dreams into account when you make decisions. You know, when you're single, it's all about you. You can make your own decisions and go your own way. When you're married and then when a family comes along, you've got other people to consider in making the decisions that you do.
You're right. Now, back to basketball. You said that you did play when you were in high school and in college and things of that nature. What year did you graduate college?
1982. Michael Jordan's freshman year.
No. Oh, my goodness. Were you able to go to a Bulls game?
I actually played against Michael Jordan in college.
Wow. Tell me about that. How was that?
So it was very interesting. They held a tournament in Charlotte, North Carolina every year. It was called the North-South Doubleheader. And they took two teams from North Carolina, which happened to be North Carolina and North Carolina State, and two teams from South Carolina, which happened to be my team, the Citadel, and Furman. So we were not anywhere near as big as Carolina and North Carolina State. But because we were both North Carolina, North Carolina State, were in the same conference in the ACC, and the Furman and Furman and the Citadel were also in the same conference. We were in the Southern Conference. We didn't play each other. We played the opposite team. So on Friday night, I played against Michael Jordan his freshman year. This was 1982. That's the same year that North Carolina went on and won the national championship. The next night, Saturday night, I played against Jim Valvano and North Carolina State's team, who the following year in 1983, they won the national championship. So in the course of one weekend, I was able to play against two national championship teams. And it was an amazing opportunity for me, you know, I mean, to play against that kind of competition. But fast forward, say 20 years, my youngest brother is a basketball coach in Chicago, and he coached Michael Jordan's two sons in high school. And he tells the story that one day he's at practice, and it's toward the end of practice, and he's teaching the players a drill, and he looks up and nobody's paying attention to anything that he's saying. So he looks over to where they're looking, and it was the door to come into the gym, and Michael Jordan had come into the gym as a dad to pick his kids up and take them home after practice. But everybody was so excited. So my brother looks at him and says, "Hey, Michael, you're a little bit of a distraction. Would you mind stepping out into the hall until practice is over?" And Jordan and his wife were incredibly gracious people. They didn't try to coach the team or do anything like that. They just acted like every other, you know, set of parents. And Jordan was like, "I'm sorry, coach. I know I'll be out in the hall till practice is over." And so my brother thought afterwards, you know, "I'm probably the only coach in the history of basketball that ever kicked Michael Jordan out of practice." So,
yeah, a lot of people just say, "Come on, Michael, yeah, what you got to say? Come
yeah,
on.
Exactly.
Listen to him, kids."
Right.
I mean, no. Speaking of college basketball, I know. I don't know if you heard that somebody named Keith back in Indiana. Keith Smart.
Keith Smart. Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I met him. He's a really nice guy. You know, I asked him for an autograph. He's a really nice guy. He's out coaching. He's a phenomenal coach. And yeah, as soon as you brought up college basketball in Chicago, I was like, I know somebody right next door.
Well, it's interesting. When I was in high school, I played against a player by the name of Isaiah Thomas. We were in the same conference. Isaiah Thomas went on to Indiana and played for Bobby Knight, won a national championship, and then went on to the Detroit Pistons and won a couple of NBA championships. So I'm a little familiar with Indiana basketball and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, Keith Smart, absolutely. What a great player. And I didn't realize he was coaching now.
Yeah. That's what we decided to do. I was like, "Hey, I support you, my friend. It was nice to meet you," and things like that. But
that's great.
Yeah. Chicago. I love Chicago. I'm sorry. As soon as you say Chicago, I think about the bean and the pizza and just a lot of people say, "Oh, Chicago has, you know, terrible police," or "Chicago has this and that." And I look at things on all three different factors. There's a lot of great things that also came out of Chicago, whether it's the South Side, whether it's the main streets of Chicago. Chicago has some phenomenal people, some intelligent people, and I love Chicago personally, but
I do too. Both my brothers live there, and my mother's still alive, and she lives there as well. So I don't get back very often. As a matter of fact, my brothers were just out here a couple of weeks ago, and we spent 3 days. We didn't turn the television on. We didn't leave the house, and we just laughed and told stories and lied to each other and just had a great time.
Awesome. I do have one question for you. When you were younger, were you, because I don't know if Chicago, if they have fishing. Do you guys used to fish when you were younger?
The only time I fished when I was younger is my father took our family to a vacation in Michigan, and we fished on a lake there. I did not catch a thing, but that's my only, I did go deep sea fishing when I was in South Carolina. Again, did not catch a thing. So don't take me fishing with you, because you won't. I'm not a good luck charm in that regard.
It's okay. What advice What's some of the best advice your parents ever gave you?
I think the interesting thing about my parents, you know, my story is not one where, you know, my dad was an alcoholic and he beat my mom and all that kind of stuff. I mean, my parents taught us the value of family, you know, of loving each other, of caring for each other, of supporting each other. And I think that was something that I've always tried to do, you know, with our family. And, you know, my parents did what I call divide and conquer parenting, where, you know, Terry's got a game over here, dad will go to that. Larry's got a practice over here, mom will go to that. You know, so we were constantly running in a million different directions. And my mom would stay up late, you know, washing our practice uniforms and our regular uniforms and everything. So we always had what we needed, not to mention she was always running to the store, you know, to get milk or meat or what. I mean, when you have, you know, 6'8", 6'7", 6'6", and 6'5", we had some pretty hearty appetites. So mom was really the glue that held our family together. But I really think what our parents not just told us, but actually lived it, was the importance of family and loving, caring, and supporting for each other.
That's true. That's very important. I agree. Now, you told me that you've written a book. Do you have another book in the works possibly?
Possibly. So Sustainable Excellence is a book about success, how people can be successful in life. And success is what we do for ourselves. I'd like to write another book about another topic that also begins with S, and that's significance. And significance is what we do for other people. Now, don't get me wrong. I think you can be successful and significant at the same time, but I haven't started writing yet, but I've actually started to compile stories that would go into a book about significance. So that's a possibility of something that may be coming down the road.
I respect it. Now, what other ideas did, because you pretty much eclipsed everything in the American dream, to say the least. What other ideas or concepts do you have for anybody in the future, whether it's, you know, creating a show or anything like that? Because I personally feel like you can create a TV show. That's me personally, because I feel like you have the drive for it, you have the stories and the relatability. And I feel as though you will be an amazing storyteller.
Well, thank you. I like to think that I do with that. I do have some good stories, and I think I tell them in a way that helps other people, or at least I try to do that. I have been approached about television and doing my own podcast and things like that. As I mentioned to you, I still am being treated for cancer. So I get treated for an entire week every third week. So things like that are just, they're not in the cards right now, because I just don't have the time to commit to something that, I mean, if I'm going to do something, I want it to be the best. I want to be excellent at it. And I just don't feel I have the time to give to that now. So we'll see. You know, God works in mysterious ways. I probably shouldn't be here given my cancer journey. I should have been dead a couple times before, but I didn't. I didn't die. I'm still here. And so I'm just gonna leave it in His hands and let Him decide which direction He wants me to go. And if He doesn't want me to go any of those directions, that's fine with me. I've been very fortunate. You know, I started my speaking business right as COVID started to ramp up. And so I really wasn't able to get it off the ground. It's starting to open up now. But, you know, you look at how do you tweak that? I mean, there are a lot of people, I'm sure a lot of people that listen to your podcast that have businesses. And it's like, wait a minute, now that COVID's gone, I don't, you know, how am I going to change the way I deliver my goods to my customers? And for me, somebody came to me and said, hey, would you be a guest on my podcast? And Jeremiah, honestly, this was my response to them. What's a podcast? I had no idea what a podcast was back then. And now I've probably been on 500 podcasts all around the world as a guest, and I've had some amazing experience, met some great people like yourself, and really have not had a bad experience yet. So if this is what I do for the rest of my life, then that's what I do. If there's something else, then I'll take it as it comes.
I appreciate that, honestly. Well, Do you have anything you would like to promote or anything at all, my friend?
Like I said, I have the book, and the book can pretty much be gotten anywhere you can get a book online, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Apple iBooks, however you decide you want to get it. It's in, you know, ebook form and hardcover and things like that. I've just started a membership that is off of the book. People kept reaching out and saying, hey, we want to go deeper. We want to do more things. Or they heard me on a podcast and said, you know, can we put a membership together? And I was really hesitant to do that because that was also something that takes a tremendous amount of time and work. But eventually I thought, well, if enough people are asking, I'm going to do it. So I have a membership. It's called sustainableexcellencemembership.com. You can actually download a free copy of my book if you go there, sustainableexcellencemembership.com. And it's just getting off the ground. I just started it in June, so it's really not even 2 months old yet, but it's meeting with some good success, and I'm kind of excited about it and see where it goes.
I am too, honestly.
Thank you.
Your story, just everything, it's just phenomenal.
Thank you.
Well, sadly, this is the worst part about the job. To the next episode of Small Way Podcast, this is Jeremiah and this is Mr. Terry Tucker. We will see you guys later. And